And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We've got a full hour of analysis, discussion, and your phone calls and emails as we look now at national politics. We are joined, as always, every month by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, how are you?
How are you, Michael? I'm so sorry to hear about this tragedy in Cincinnati. It puts a pall on everything because we have such good news to talk about with the politics coming up.
Well, it is certainly a challenge to talk about national politics, certainly, but in the context of the ongoing tragedy here in Cincinnati, it may be even more difficult, but we do have some important stuff to get to. So, Ken, we always appreciate you joining us, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But first, let's introduce our other partner here who's in the studio with me, WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Howard, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
A little later on, we'll be joined by Miami University assistant professor of American politics, Dr. Rachel Bloom. She'll join us a little bit later. And we also want to hear your thoughts on impeachment, Ukraine, the Democratic primary, the election results in Kentucky, and what, if anything, that might tell us about the state of things nationally. So give us a call now. 513-419-7100. And you can email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll look for your comments and tweets and get some of those into the show as well. But as always, we start with a trivia question because we've got a fancy prize for you if you can get it right. Ken, what is this month's trivia question?
Well, Michael, this is actually Kentucky-related because you told me we would be talking about the Kentucky gubernatorial elections and the new governor who's coming up in Kentucky. But the question is, now, with this election, once this election is done, Republicans will control everything in Kentucky, both Senate seats, a majority in the House, both houses of the state legislature, every statewide office, except for governor and lieutenant governor. So the question is... when was the last time that one party controlled every part of state government in Kentucky? Now, if you could name the year, name the president of the United States at the time, and if you could name the governor, that would be even better. But when was the last time that one party controlled everything I just mentioned in Kentucky?
Okay, so we're talking at this point, both United States senators from Kentucky being from the same party, the governor and lieutenant governor being from this state party. And remember, up until like 99, they were elected separately. And also a majority of the United States representatives that Kentucky sent, all from the same party.
Plus the state legislature the attorney general and the state treasurer and the state auditor, all the same party.
This is okay. A complex question. So
all
basically,
statewide offices, all state legislative offices, all congressional offices.
Okay, so
that was Howard Wilkinson, former Frank Lausche staffer, right?
Thank you.
We want to know the year, who was president, and for a bonus point, who was governor the last time that one party controlled all of Kentucky government, including the state Senate, the state House, all the constitutional statewide offices, both U.S. Senate seats and a majority of the congressional seats? You can give us a call at 513-419-7100 with your answer. Ken, tell them what they'll win.
Aside from getting a headache trying to figure out this question, they will win a very valuable political junkie button.
That's awesome. So call us 513-419-7100. I don't always do well in the political junkie questions, but I have to tell you, and I didn't cheat, Ken. I got this right.
I was very impressed.
All right.
Very impressed.
Well, let's get on with the show. This is the political junkie. So let's talk about politics. And there's no way to start this type of show without first touching on impeachment. I want to start with some polling on impeachment to get an idea of where the American people appear to stand after days of testimony on Capitol Hill. And this is a report from CNN today. Quote, half of Americans say Trump should be impeached and removed from office. Half. 43% say he should not. Neither figure has changed since October, with support for impeachment remaining at its highest level thus far in CNN polling. I want to touch on independents as well from the CNN poll. 47% in favor of impeachment, 45% opposed. So, Ken, with neither figure changing, what can we glean from the impact of the impeachment inquiry testimony so far?
Well, that's what's so remarkable about those numbers, and I don't question them for a second. I think it just shows how the country feels and how Congress is feeling. Basically, what I heard for 2 weeks of testimony, or 10 days of testimony, whatever, from the 13th until the 21st of November, is that these non-political government officials, these career government officials, in sometimes unimpassioned voices, describe what seemed to me to be this either conspiracy or this plot by the President of the United States and those who work for him to use a foreign government for his personal bidding to try to have them concoct an investigation into one of an investigation into a likely opponent of the president's, that is Joe Biden and his family and things like that, and promise this government, the government of Ukraine, military aid or at least a quid pro quo. They would get this aid if they went through this investigation. And one witness after another seemed to say some dramatic things that the president was involved in. Not only was the president, it was the Secretary of State and the Vice President and the acting Chief of Staff. And, of course, Rudy Giuliani, all those people were part of this plan. Republicans, of course, said this is absolute nonsense. Nobody proves anything. Nobody was there. It's all hearsay. Third person hearsay. It's a plot by the Democrats and the corrupt media to overturn the 2016 election. Now, as gripping as this was, Michael, you asked a big question. What minds were changed in Washington? What minds were changed around the country? And I suspect that number is pretty close to zero.
So, hang on just a second, Howard. I'll reframe the question, and we'll come over to you. But how soon do we see the conversation shifting for supporters of the president from, that this is nothing to, well, sure, this happened, but it's not impeachable?
Well, you will have an opportunity. I mean, now that the House Intelligence Committee has finished its hearings and now it's preparing a report, it will now go to the House Judiciary Committee, where both sides apparently will be able to have their say and then vote on impeachment. The House, the full House, will vote by the end of the year, and there will be full hearings in the Judiciary Committee, and then a full vote by the House. But I still want to say before Howard gets in, just one thing that still sticks with me when I think, and I always love to compare, go back to Richard Nixon, but when I think of John Dean's very emotional and damning testimony about Nixon's involvement, the cancer in the presidency, the involvement that Nixon had in the cover-up. This was June of 73, and Richard Nixon didn't leave office until 14 months later, August of 74. So even if there were a John Dean testimony, a dramatic testimony in the past week or so, which I think in some ways there were, There's no indication that Trump is leaving anytime soon.
Howard.
Yeah, I think Ken's right about that. During the Nixon era, John Dean basically kept the story going. He ignited it. Things like the Saturday Night Massacre kept it going. It took a long time. These things don't happen overnight. But the one thing about the poll numbers that you cited earlier, Michael, I've seen poll numbers on the question of are you paying close attention to these hearings? Are you watching these hearings? Are you not watching some of these hearings or none of these hearings? And they almost match the numbers that you were talking about. So I think it's a matter of how engaged individual people are in this whole process.
It's interesting that when we've talked about this over the months of this year, as we appear to be heading towards this, both of you have brought up how public perception and opinion about Richard Nixon changed when the televised hearings started. And we bring up the point that, well, sure, there were only a few networks that were broadcasting this. If you were watching TV at all, this was the only thing that was on. And so we discuss, well, now there's all these opportunities to see basically whatever you want. So not only are there the opportunities to be distracted by something else, but you can watch this feed through a desired narrative. So if there are agendas out there to be pushed from any side of the political aisle, Ken, it looks like people are able to either avoid it outright or just have their positions reinforced. Is that not right?
That's absolutely true. When you think back to 1974, there was no Breitbart. There was no Fox News. basically it was the three networks, and that was it, and that's where you got your information from. Now you have defenders of the president. There's no shortage of that, especially on Fox News, where where you can hear your opinion if you believe that the president is not guilty, or when, even if he committed some unfortunate acts, whether it's impeachable or not, you do have that kind of point of view to be found in the media, on television, on the web, which you certainly didn't have in 1973 or 74.
For those of you listening, we want to hear from you as well. What are your thoughts so far on what's taken place on Capitol Hill? Has it changed your mind? Has it reinforced your position? Give us a call at 513-419-7100. President Trump, meanwhile, is sort of seemingly sharing unsourced numbers about polling related to impeachment. Quote, on Monday morning, he offered some thoughts about polling on impeachment. He said support for impeachment is dropping like a rock down into the 20s in some polls. Dems should now get down to work and finally approve USMCA and much more. So, Howard, what is the president hoping to accomplish with that kind of messaging that seems to be based in no reality?
Trying to fool people into thinking that this is not an important matter. And it is an important matter. Now, he does seem to have a problem with the truth sometimes.
So let's talk a little bit about what we learned, actually, in this testimony. We carried it live here on 91.7 WVXU, removed our show from the air for a few days, and it felt historic. You know, it certainly felt like this is something that will be in history books about this country. NPR reported today witnesses and investigators also did not agree with whether Trump had explicitly directed the aides, since dubbed the Three Amigos, for Ukraine, that they were required to submit to the tasking of his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, or whether what Trump did was, in so many words, shrug and say, quote, Ukraine, if you guys want to do some stuff, you can talk to Rudy. NPR went on to report, likewise, neither lawmakers nor the witnesses agreed whether Trump should have pursued this policy in the first place. So, Ken, what happens next? How does this look to be playing out based on the testimony and for the major players involved, the ones who are going to ultimately vote on this?
Well, that's a great question, too, because first of all, I think if you look at the polls, let me go back to the polls for 1 second. The fact that you have half the country, or maybe a little more than half the country, now supporting impeachment and removal, well, that's far different than you had several months ago when that was still a fringe position in the Democratic Party. So I think it is moving that direction, although very, very slowly. But the fact is that one of the reasons Nancy Pelosi wanted to hold this off as long as she could is because she wanted to be more bipartisan. She wanted at least to have some Republicans come on board, and that's one of the reasons that she picked Adam Schiff, who I think did a masterful job of making the case he had tried to make, as opposed to other members of the Democratic power structure that were not as effective. But even after all these days of hearings, all these 12 witnesses or whatever, and some of the dramatic testimony, not one Republican member of the Congress, not one, has called for impeachment. Even some of the Republicans who were thought to be on the fence, like Will Hurd, the Republican from Texas, who's retiring this year, who has said some critical things about the president, Francis Rooney of Florida, who also said some critical things about the president. When asked about impeachment, they said no. I'm not pleased with.
We may have lost Ken there momentarily. Uh-oh. It happens on occasion, so we will do our best to reconnect with him and continue to proceed. But Howard, let's pick that up. I mean, what Ken was saying basically is that the needle is certainly not moved on the Republicans in Congress, who will ultimately have a pretty important say in this matter.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they have gathered, gathered around Trump, and they've circled the wagons for the time being. I'm still convinced, though, at some point, if, in particular, this is in reference to the Senate and the Senate trial, if you start seeing Republican senators who are up for election next year slipping in the polls in their home states and in trouble, Mitch McConnell is not going to allow that to happen. He's going to, his priority is one thing and one thing only: preserve that majority so he can be the majority leader of the Senate. and hold on to his power. If he sees it slipping away, then Donald Trump may have some problems. He may just turn them all loose and say, do whatever you want.
You see a scenario in which the legislators would move to save their own skin if it meant turning their back on the president.
That's right.
Okay. I understand that Ken Rudin is back on the line with us. Ken, are you there?
Yeah, I am here.
Okay, so good to hear you again. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you've got a position that you'd like to share with us on how the impeachment process has gone so far. We do have to talk specifically about one Republican member of Congress who had some news break about him in recent days, Republican California Congressman Devin Nunes. He's serving on the committee that's overseeing the testimony hearing so far. This is a report from CNBC. Lev Parnas, a business associate of Rudy Giuliani, wants to testify to Congress that aides to Representative Devin Nunes called off a trip to Ukraine this year when they realized they would be required to notify Democratic Committee Chairman Adam Schiff. The report goes on to say the purpose of the trip was to interview two Ukrainian prosecutors who claimed to have evidence that could help President Trump's reelection campaign, according to Parnas's lawyer. The report says Parnas also alleges that Nunes, a leading Trump ally, himself traveled to Vienna last year to interview a potential source of political dirt on Joe Biden. Ken Rudin, what kind of conflict could this be?
Where do I start? I mean, that has been Devin Nunes from the beginning of when he was chairman, when the Republicans still had control of the House. He was accused of taking secret information and going into the White House and informing the White House what he learned from these hearings he was conducting as chairman of the Intelligence Committee. So this is vintage Devin Nunes. And of course, he will say and has said that this is all not true. Well, he didn't even say it's not true. He said it's the corrupt media, the dishonest media that's reporting this. And when I have an opportunity to give my case, I will. But the thought of Devin Nunes trying to being the leading Republican, the ranking Republican on a committee that's trying to investigate whether some conspiracy went on between the White House and trying to get dirt on Joe Biden, and the fact that he himself, Devin Nunes, met with Ukrainians who were offering dirt on Joe Biden. I wouldn't say it's unbelievable because everything is unbelievable, but the fact is, if you want to talk about a conflict, if you want to talk about an ethics investigation that Adam Schiff has even hinted about, Devin Nunes' conduct, alleged conduct, I should say, is topic number one.
And Howard, what does this mean for his role in the investigation so far? I mean, it seems like if you had these contacts, these contacts, which we don't know for certain happened, but if they did happen, why did he play a role in the committee
What was he doing there in the first place? And my other question for him would be, when is the appropriate time for you to explain this? You keep saying you'll explain this at the appropriate time. If that time has not come yet, I can't imagine when it would be.
All right, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Let's go to the phones now for a question or comment. We have Lino on the line. Lino, are you there? I apologize if I'm saying your name wrong. Is it Lino or Lino?
Nope, it's Lino. It's correct.
All right, Lino. Okay. Thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment?
Well, it's a comment and a question. I'm perplexed. I'm a lifelong independent. I spent 31 years in the military and always try to look at facts before making a decision. And what perplexes me, and I simply cannot comprehend how so many people, many of which are my friends and are very intelligent, educated, refuse to listen to facts and make a decision based on facts. They accept one side or the other when the facts are, you know, fairly incontrovertible. I just don't understand that, and I wish somebody could enlighten to me as to why we have such a great divide.
Lino, we appreciate the call so much. Thanks for listening and for calling in, and we'll let our guest weigh in on that. Ken, it seems that Lino is talking about what we were talking about at the beginning with the polling, and it's that it seems that the numbers are pretty well cemented at this point, and people are not being swayed one way or the other, despite some evidence that is presented.
Yeah, I say this not as a Trump opponent or supporter, but I agree with Lino completely. The fact is that somebody and two people could look at the exact same thing and see get completely different interpretations of it is remarkable. I mean, anybody, to me, who watched these hearings saw some dishonest and certainly disreputable actions being taken place. I mean, what president of the United States would try to go to a foreign power to get dirt on a rival, on a political rival? To me, it's just unbelievable. But I know people too who look at it and said, "Well, it may not be the greatest thing, but what about Hillary's emails?" Everybody does it, and is it impeachable? And I think after all these days of hearings, listening to all these witnesses, it goes back to Lino's point. I'm not sure if anybody's minds were changed, and that is one of the more astonishing lessons I got from this week of hearings.
We're going to talk about Rudy Giuliani and then this judge's decision that could lead to former White House counsel Don McGahn testifying in a semi-related manner in front of another House committee. We're also going to address the Democratic primary and see what the latest is going on with that. And then we will see if the Kentucky governor's election results have any deeper meaning as we look ahead to 2020 across the country. Let's remind everyone what this month's trivia question is for your chance to win a political junkie button. Ken, I'm going to try to translate this for our listeners again.
Good luck, Michael.
We want to know the year, who was the president, and for a bonus point, who was the governor? The year, who was president, and who was the governor for a bonus point? The last time that one party controlled the Kentucky governor's office, lieutenant governor's office, and all the other statewide constitutional offices like Secretary of State and Attorney General, as well as both chambers of the General Assembly, both seats in the U.S. Senate, and a majority of the United States representatives from my beloved bluegrass state. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
For Cincinnati Edition comes from the Johnson Foundation, a private grant-making foundation committed to creating a more vibrant urban core through community development and civic engagement. More information at johnson-foundation.org. Support comes from Dr. Fred Peck, a member of the American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, providing dental care for the entire family by treating the underlying cause of dental disease, which can also affect overall health and helping to maintain a healthy smile. Dr. Peck is accepting new patients in his Montgomery office, 621-7666, or online at pecksmiles.com.
Support comes from Crafty Supermarket, an indie craft market celebrating their 10th anniversary, featuring over 100 local and regional makers, designers, and artists, plus a live DJ, local food vendors, and hands-on maker activities. The show is open to the public at Music Hall Ballroom on November 30th and December 1st from 11 to 5. Information at craftysupermarket.com.
Support comes from Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park's holiday classic, A Christmas Carol. Faithful storytelling and stage magic combine, bringing to life Scrooge's time-traveling journey with the spirits one magical Christmas Eve. First Financial Bank presents A Christmas Carol, November 27th to December 29th. Tickets, cincyplay.com. Mark's Theater Season, presented by Schuller Group.
Support for WVXU comes from sustaining members like you and from Bob's Red Mill. Bob's Red Mill is employee-owned, believes in good food for all, and is proud to offer a wide selection of whole grain products. You can learn more online at bobsredmill.com. That's bobsredmill.com.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. It's our full hour of discussion, commentary, and your phone calls about national politics. On the line with us is the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
In the studio with me is WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Howard, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
And let's bring in on the phone Miami University Assistant Professor of American Politics, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Dr. Bloom, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're glad you're here. A reminder that our trivia question this month, we want to know the year, who was president, and for a bonus point, who was the governor the last time one party controlled the Kentucky governor's office, all of the statewide elected offices below governor, both chambers of the General Assembly, and both United States Senate seats, as well as a majority of the Congress people sent to Washington, D.C. We do have someone who wants to give this crazy question a shot so far. It is Glenn. Hi, Glenn. What's your answer?
I'm laughing. The more I listen to this question, the more I don't know. I'm going to guess. I just remember Thurston Martin and, John Sherman Cooper being both Republicans and being senators at the same time. And I'm thinking it was during Eisenhower. And beyond that, and then I was thinking Wendell Willkie was governor, but I think he was a Democrat. So I think I'm all screwed up. But anyway, it was fun to guess.
Glenn.
And I did want to add one thing. Your whole conversation, if people could ever learn what the word ethics means, there wouldn't be any question about this whole impeachment thing. But somehow that's gotten lost in the turmoil, and that's just such a shame.
Glenn, we appreciate your perspective, and I'll do Ken's work here and say you got a great guess, but it's not correct. No. But thank you for calling in and give it some more thought and call in again. So
Could I just add something?
Yeah, sure.
I love the fact that we're talking about Thurston Morton and John Sherman Cooper. I love that.
Yeah.
Wendell Willkie, too.
But having said that, when they were in the Senate, everything else in Kentucky was run by the Democrats. Everything. All the governorships, everything. So it was a great guess, but those were the only Republicans in the state back then.
Ahead of our next break, Ken, with your permission, I'll give a little hint, see if I can, because we really want to give this button away, right?
Okay, sure.
All right, thank you. Let's bring Dr. Bloom in, the assistant professor from Miami University. Dr. Bloom, we've been discussing impeachment and the American public's cemented opinion on this so far. It looks like poll numbers are not moving on this. So what's your take on why that is?
Well, poll numbers have moved a little bit. So 538 has been tracking this for a little while, and in the November 22nd to 24th polls, you have a slight bump, so it's not as big as a lot of Democrats would like, but independents have increased their support slightly in that period of time. Republicans have not, Democrats have, but this, I think there are a couple of reasons for this. One is just where we are in the impeachment hearings. So this, at this point with Nixon, support for impeachment was still less than it is right now. The other might be that nothing really dramatic and new has occurred. Taken largely, right? So some of this has been dramatic, but we don't have that bump we got when impeachment hearings were first announced or when the hearings first started, because right now it's just kind of been a holding pattern with different people speaking in front of the committee and right now them breaking for Thanksgiving. So there's been nothing to really move people's opinion drastically.
So Rachel, do you think there's anticipation for maybe bigger star witnesses that might have a greater impact on the way people feel about this one way or the other?
I think that could move things a little bit more. So the district court's ruling today about McGahn, although it wouldn't require all of the president's advisors who've been subpoenaed to appear, it certainly suggests that will be required soon. So hearing from people like John Bolton or maybe McGahn could potentially provide moving testimony. But the question is how much movement we could get without House Republicans starting to change their tune.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines in just a moment to get some perspective from our listeners. But first, Ken, we heard Dr. Bloom reference Don McGahn, the former White House counsel, who appears now to be clear to testify, not as part of the impeachment inquiry. This is a semi-related matter before the House Judiciary Committee, which is probing the alleged obstruction of justice by President Trump, as detailed in the Mueller report. You remember the Mueller report, don't you, Ken?
Back then, all the way back then, right, exactly.
So is this consequential?
Well, you know something, I hear the hesitation in Dr. Bloom's voice, and I agree with it completely, because even if we do hear from Bolton, and even if we do hear from McGahn, and remember, the White House will appeal this decision, and which could take months longer, so we may not, if we ever hear McGahn, it could be well into 2020, but let me go back quickly, a little history lesson. You know, John Dean testified in June of 73, that we learned about the tapes in the White House, but in October of 73 was the Saturday Night Massacre, when Nixon got rid of everybody investigating him, and yet a majority of the American people were still opposed to impeachment. So I agree with Dr. Bloom that even if McGahn and even if Bolton do testify, how much of the needle will be moved? I wonder if much of it will move at all.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's go to Jackie. Hi, Jackie. What's your question or comment?
First, I have a comment. I think the reason that a lot of Americans may be not paying as much attention to the impeachment hearings as you would think they would is just due to the fact that it seems like a foregone conclusion that he's not going to be impeached. So to get like heavily invested in something you feel like you know the conclusion to doesn't really make, you know, as much sense. At least that I've watched some of it, but not as much as I would if I felt like something significant was going to happen as a result. And then my question is, you all had alluded to earlier about the influence of information on social media and right-wing news outlets that weren't there during the Nixon years. Are we ever going to get back to a political landscape that is quote-unquote normal, or is this just our new normal where we're going to be mired in this?
Jackie, thanks so much for your call and your question. And Howard, let's go to you. You've been in the media for a long time. I don't see an opportunity to go back. The doors are open. There's too many opportunities for partisan media.
Yeah,
but there are, we should point out, there are good journalists still working and good outlets still working.
And they're on the internet and they're on social media, but it's difficult for people to piece this together and decide what's credible, what's not credible on social media.
Dr. Bloom, in your classes at Miami, do you have any discussions about the way that media is consumed through a political lens?
We definitely do. So my students are, I guess, now what we would call Gen Z, and their concerns are with conflict in the political landscape, and they tend to blame media for it generally. But when they get more specific, they're really blaming Facebook and their parents. So it's more of a generational discussion. So to them, a lot of this will go away as soon as generational replacement occurs and people aren't watching cable news as much because they try to avoid it at all costs.
Very interesting.
So I do think there could be some change here, but to the caller's first point about not feeling particularly invested because it's just not clear what will happen, I do think that's what a lot of Americans feel, but I would like to encourage the caller and anyone else who has opinions on how this should go to call or email their state representatives, so in the House and in the Senate. It may not seem like much, but this is the only thing that these representatives are truly accountable and the only thing that would lead them to oppose their own party leadership, which would be hearing from enough of their constituents that they believe that their reelection is in peril.
Okay, let's go to the phones again because we have someone who wants to give our very difficult trivia question another try.
Don't read it again.
So we have Allie on the line. Hi, Allie. What's your answer?
Oh, thank you. Well, my guess was I was reading an article about when Mitch McConnell joined the Senate and that he broke a deadlock in Kentucky state politics. So I was going to guess under Ronald Reagan in 1984 when Martha Lane Collins was governor.
Ken Roden. Oh!
Wait, I haven't said anything yet.
Okay, Ken, sorry, we jumped the gun.
It's correct! And I have a feeling, Michael, I have a feeling that the hint you were going to give was that you just go be back before Mitch McConnell.
That's how I was able to solve it, right? Because McConnell's been there a long time.
When he was first elected in 1984, before that, everything was Democratic, every office.
Except for the occasional John Sherman Cooper who would pop up, or the Louis
the 50s,
B. Nunn.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Allie, congratulations. Stay on the line. Our producer, Elise, will get your information so that Ken can send on that political junkie button. We've got more calls coming in.
Very good.
Bloom still on the line. Howard in the studio. Ken, we're going to get to the Democratic primary where a couple new candidates are in, and then we'll discuss whether we learned anything from Kentucky that could play out nationally. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Support comes from Jack Wolking and the Wolking team at Comey & Shepard Realtors, advisor in the luxury lifestyle market. The Wolking team's goal is to make your transition as smooth and enjoyable as is humanly possible. You can discover more at thewolkingteam.com. That's the W-O-L-K-I-N-G team.com.
Thanksgiving is a time for gathering, to eat way too much food. And you don't want to miss anything.
Who ate all the hors d'oeuvres here?
Trying to keep up with the news can leave you worried that you'll miss something, too. But NPR packs your plate with everything you need and want without giving you more than you can handle. So get your fill comfortably with Morning Edition from NPR News.
On 91.7 WVXU with host Marianne Zalesnik.
Support comes from Artichoke, a carefully curated collection of cookware for people who love to cook, specializing in cookware and kitchen tools from around the world. Artichoke focuses on providing high-quality products with a knowledgeable staff. Locally owned and operated at 1824 Elm Street, just south of Rheingeist, near historic Findlay Market. More at artichokeotr.com.
Support comes from the Heritage Bank Center, presenting Cirque du Soleil January 23rd through the 27th at Heritage Bank Center. Cirque du Soleil is back on ice. You can discover Axel, an electrifying and thrilling on-ice acrobatic show for the whole family. Tickets and information online at heritagebankcenter.com.
Cincinnati Edition is supported, in part, by a grant from the Maxwell C. Weaver Foundation, U.S. Bank trustee.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Hello, Michael.
WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Hi, Howard.
Hey.
And Miami University assistant professor of American politics, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right, we've got 10 minutes, y'all, and we got a lot to get to. But first, Howard, I got to embarrass you because I forgot to do this before the break. You always get to guess at the trivia question, and you're usually really good, but this time you failed.
No, I blew it. I bow to you when it comes to the south the south side of the river and the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
All right, well, we appreciate your
honesty. I said something, the only thing I could think of was John White Brown, but that clue should have triggered it for me.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's talk about the Democratic primary, and we had a couple of new candidates, because if that's one thing I think Americans were talking about, we don't have enough Democrats running for president, right. So let's get a couple more, but that's not to discount the legitimacy of these candidates. Ken, Michael Bloomberg and Deval Patrick, the former Massachusetts governor, have entered the race, but Bloomberg certainly did it with a bigger splash. He's spending $30 million or more on ads to introduce himself to voters.
This week alone.
Yeah. So who are these potential voters for Michael Bloomberg, Ken?
I think this sounds simplistic, but I think if there was if the goal was to get a centrist Democrat, a moderate Democrat, not one of those left wingers, like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And of course, I'm saying that in quotes. But if the goal was we need a centrist moderate candidate to beat Donald Trump, for the longest time, people thought it would be Joe Biden. But Joe Biden is not doing well in Iowa. He's not doing well in New Hampshire. He still has a big lead in South Carolina, but that could change if he loses the first two contests. And perhaps people like Patrick, especially Bloomberg, say, well, look, if Biden was our hope, our moderate centrist hope to defeat Donald Trump, and he's not doing it, and he's failing at that task, then maybe they need somebody like me, somebody like me and my hundreds of millions of dollars and my checkered record, of course, but to come in and save the party.
Rachel, you heard Ken's analysis there. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, I would generally agree. I think we can draw some historical parallels, but to see someone doing something similar to Bloomberg, we have to go back before the McGovern-Fraser primary reform. So we're talking 1968 and Herbert Humphrey. Someone hasn't tried to bypass the primary process like this basically since it was created.
Very, very, very rare. Okay.
Could I just add something to that?
That's a point.
Yeah.
Can I just say something to that so quickly? Dr. Bloom is exactly right. Back then, when Humphrey announced, he didn't enter a single primary and won the nomination. But as she points out, since 1972, the way to get the nomination is to compete and win in the primaries. And Bloomberg is skipping Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina. That has not been done in the modern era.
Howard, it looks like Pete Buttigieg is having a moment.
Pete is having a moment, and how long it will last, is hard to tell. He's having a moment because he is likable. He does have ideas. He is that more centrist.
Yeah, it plays to what Ken was saying, right? That if there are voters right. out there yearning for that more moderate Democrat, that
well, he fits the bill for that. Now he has other problems. Apparently, he's not popular at all with the African American voters, and that's a very big part of the Democratic coalition. But, they're going to go through this thing about, do we have a progressive or do we have a moderate? Sooner or later, they got to make up their minds and just say, look, okay, we got to get through this election. The main job is to defeat Donald Trump. And then we can fight with each other for the next 4 years about who's in charge of the party.
Ken Rudin, how big of a problem is it for Pete Buttigieg to have low support right now among African Americans? Because I would just posit that Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Cory Booker, who are African-American candidates for president, they're polling pretty poorly, too. But we don't hear a lot of commentary about their lack of support, even from African-American voters.
Well, I think the reason is because the last poll I saw, it may have been a Quinnipiac or it may have been a Monmouth poll. But the fact is that Buttigieg's numbers among African-Americans in South Carolina was zero. I mean, whatever you think about Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, it wasn't zero. And for the fact is, to win the Democratic primary, as Howard points out, African-American votes are significant. It's not even a part of the coalition. It may be the coalition. One of the reasons Hillary Clinton defeated Bernie Sanders, aside from the Bernie Sanders argument that the whole thing was rigged, which I don't think it was, but certainly the fact that black voters stayed with Hillary Clinton. And right now they're staying with Joe Biden because of his loyal service as vice president to Barack Obama. And we're seeing that in the South Carolina polls. But, as I say, if Biden loses Iowa, loses New Hampshire, and conversely, if Buttigieg wins Iowa and does well and wins New Hampshire, I think a lot of voters will change. But he does have a record back home with the police department, with the shooting of the black person, the black man by a white police officer, the fact that he's had trouble getting blacks on the South Bend police department, that is hurting him.
And this is particularly important in South Carolina. I mean, that is a crucial
part. That's the first
part.
Primary with a large population of African-American voters.
A majority black voting population.
Okay.
On the Democratic side, yeah.
Let's get back to the callers here. Sheila is up next. Sheila, we are running out of time, so quickly give us your question or comment.
Well, can you hear me?
We sure can, Sheila. Go ahead.
My concern is Winstrup and Chabot and Portman. And the traditional Republican values that made me a Republican back in the day, conservatism, morality, budget constraints, ethics. Where are they on this?
Sheila,
they are not. It's like they're hiding under the desk.
Yeah, we appreciate the call very much, Sheila. And let's toss that over to Dr. Bloom. Your thoughts on the positions taken by local congressmen Steve Chabot, Brad Winstrup, who's on the committee, listening to the impeachment hearing so far, and Senator Rob Portman.
Yes, this is something I have a lot of thoughts about, but the caller is absolutely right that the party of order and tradition is no longer the Republican Party, and this has a lot more to do with the difference between ideology and partisanship than anything else. So in contemporary politics, the parties, but specifically the Republican Party, has become an identity to a lot of voters, and representatives, as well as Donald Trump, have made quite a bit of that. So they are defaulting to kind of friend-enemy, us-them language instead of language of principles, and I mean, this is the result, and the caller is unfortunately pretty right about what's going on, both with the Ohio representatives and with the Republican Party nationally.
In our final moments, Ken, let's return to your favorite state, Kentucky, and talk about
my favorite Commonwealth.
Certainly, right. There's four to choose from, and Kentucky, I would editorialize, is the finest of all four of them.
Well, no question.
So, Governor Matt Bevin, a Republican, lost to a Democrat, Andy Beshear. He was the only Republican to lose in that election. Can we take anything from that nationally, do you think?
Yes, I say if you're very unpopular and you fight with your own party and you alienate public teachers, you're in trouble. Because I don't, for all the people thinking this was a big repudiation of Trump, I think Trump made it closer than he would have. This is the most unpopular governor in the country, and every other Republican won landslide statewide. So I don't think it says much about 2020. I think it said more about Matt Bevin than anything else.
That's what I wanted to point out, Howard, is that we did hear a lot of national media seize on this as some sort of rebuke of Republican policy. When all the other Republicans won, this seemed very specific towards Governor Bevin.
Well, you know Joe Girth, the
Louisville Courier-Journal columnist.
Yeah, columnist. His conclusion was, you know, there were all these issues out there that people can blame it on. And, you know, he said, but in the end, he lost because he's a jerk. And that was, you know, people perceived him as a jerk, and they had had enough of it. And there were about 15% of the Republican voters in Kentucky who said, no, we've had enough of him.
And now,
look how close it was.
Oh, absolutely.
He was particularly rebuked in Louisville and Lexington, which had absolute landslide victories for the Democratic candidate. But he also lost Kenton and Campbell counties, which, Ken, if you're not looking at the map, that's in our listening area. It's right across the river.
We could throw a rock from here
from Cincinnati. Yeah. And they are traditionally Republican counties.
Yes.
That's the land of Jim Bunning, who I'm sure you know. So that's an area that very surprisingly went blue this time around. Great discussion. Howard Wilkinson from right here at WVXU, Dr. Rachel Bloom from Miami University, thanks for being with us as well. And Ken Rudin, the political junkie, thank you as always for joining us too.
I'd like to thank Thurston Morton as well.
Thanks. Thurston Morton and his brother Roger.
And happy Thanksgiving to all of you as well. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director today is Dave Shermer. Find archives online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. It's Thanksgiving week, and we know your table will more than likely have a turkey on it, but what about those inventive side dishes? Are you using anything that you grew in your own garden? You want to hear about your harvest, and any other questions you have as you review the growing season, what you learned, what you didn't. The Monthly Gardening Show, tomorrow at noon on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.